Okay, good. Our next speaker is Silvio Metalli from MIT. In the early 90s, Silvio and his colleagues introduced and formulated many of the fundamental results concerning interactive proofs and interactive protocols. And today, Silvio will be speaking about rational proofs, an extension of those notions.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you all for organizing this, and thank you for inviting me. And I must say that in deciding the topic, I was undecided for a long, long time what I should talk about. It's just as a testament how much, you know, Alan's work influences many parts of what we do. And I originally chose a much more farther fertilized field of Alan. And I asked to be put in another section, but because I was put in a cryptographic section, then I went back and changed my topic, but it's going to be a bit closer to Alan, and I hope you appreciate it. The subject of the talk is perfect pseudo-randomness. So let's get going, it's very hot. Layer one is gone, good. So I'm going to address a very old question. I have one more layer which I can comfortably shed. Is there a non-determinism? Right? Is there a non-determinism in the world that is one of the most fundamental questions in philosophy and the sciences? And today I'm going to give you the complexity theory answer to this old question. So, complexity theory, that's the only slide you care about complexity theory. By the way, I must say that it is a mystery to me why is it that Turing, having defined a Turing machine, did not define complexity theory as well, because it was a very step close. But we are lucky because people like Michael were vigilant and did not let that run away, and so they pinned down this concept. So the basic concept, the only one I will need for this theory, is a one-way function. What does it mean? It's a function, as the picture shows, for which it is easy, given x, to go to f of x, but it's hard to go backwards. So what does it mean, easy? I must say, Michael paved my way this morning. Say, easy could be, say, polynomial time, for instance. Of course, you know, to add or multiply two numbers which are very short is easier than to multiply two long numbers. So when you look at complexity, you look at the length of the input. So if the input has k bits, how much time does it take you to compute f of x? And easy is k squared. K cubed, also easy. Right? So what is hard? Hard is, for example, 2 to the k. Right? Because if k is equal to 300, so we're a very short input, right? 300 bits, but 2 to the 300 is exceeds the number of elementary particles in the universe, so that is a non-human number. I mean, not for human consumption. Good. So I must say, what is the analog is of a real-life phenomenon that we are familiar with. Breaking a glass, easy. Putting together a glass, hard. One step further, frying an egg, also easy. Unfry the egg, hard. Unfortunately, killing somebody, too easy. The opposite, resurrecting, appears to be hard. So that essentially is the mathematical analog of what else happens. And I'm going to make sure that at least I leave you this message. This easy, hard thing is all we take in order to give another foundation to randomness. So what is randomness? Now, first and for all, there is the subjective answer. So I ask my grandfather, is this random? I think so. I ask my great aunt and say, no, that is not true. In the case apropos here, this actually is not random simply because it's my address, 459 Chestnut Hill Avenue, right? But who could have said? So a different approach is the one that also we touched upon this morning by Michael went through it, Kolmogorov, right? What does it mean? A string is Kolmogorov random as k bits if there is not shorter description of the string. And what can you do with this? You can prove that a Kolmogorov random string exists, but you cannot decide which strings are random, and it's non-constructive and undecidable. In particular, pseudo-random number generation is ruled out by Kolmogorov randomness, right? Because what is a pseudo-random generator? You get a seed, you get a few bits of algorithm, you stretch to a longer string, whatever your output is not Kolmogorov random by definition. So Knut says, okay, let's do some specialized test. He devoted 175 pages of his Bible on computing on the spectral test, but that is one test, and there are other tests, and what can we do about other tests? So altogether, I came to a point that we need a rigorous, as opposed to subjective, constructive, as opposed to existential, and comprehensive, so a theory of pseudo-randomness. Good. So let me start. This is the work I'm going to describe. Actually, it's done in the 80s. It was amazing. It was we discussed about the convergence in 1936. Well, there was another convergence in the 80s. In 6 years' time, somehow we settled a lot of questions, and I'm going to give you a bridge of the history of whatever happened then. So here there is a notion of unpredictability that my then advisor Manuel Bloom put together. So the picture shows a short seed, right, a string of bits that is given as an input to a generator, allegedly of pseudo-random bits, that on this input generates a much longer string. Okay. So here is the thing: no security but through via obscurity. What is G? G is an algorithm. Is public, everybody knows the description of the algorithm. Is fast, is polynomial time. I'm not interested in waiting the time of the universe to get to the first bit, doesn't help anybody. And especially important is deterministic. Of course, anyone can generate pseudo-random bits with the help of a midget who flips coins inside the generator. So the generator has to be deterministic. So what is on the left? On the left there is another bit string. This time it's secret. Is short and is truly random. So he says, wait a minute, it's truly random. What is randomness? Wait a second. So if you to speak my local jargon back there in Italy, ex nihilo nihil, which means nothing from nothing. So this stuff, you know, I'm not going to tell you where you get the randomness. I'm going to tell you that given a little bit of it, you can actually multiply and generate. So I don't want to get into contradictions right away. But I'm going to walk a very, very thin line. On the right, find we're going to have another bit string, is going to be public, is going to be long, and ought to be pseudo-random in a way that I'm going to define. So how long can it be? So let's say that we have k bits of inputs, and I want to stretch it, say, to k squared, or k cubed, or k to the fourth. So what is the big question here? So what is the next bit in this string? That is what unpredictability is. I'm going to tell you the generator, because it's public, I'll tell you what code I'm going to run. I'll tell you every single bit I output so far. And all of a sudden, you in polynomial time, why in polynomial time? Because I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm a polynomial time machine, you are a polynomial time machine too, just in case, you know, you disagree, we can take it off the line. Because if you don't have a prediction, if your prediction of what the next bit comes in 2 to the k steps, who cares? So, and what the prediction is, you output a bit that you think is going to be more likely to be the next bit output by the generator. And so, what does it mean that the sequence is unpredictable in our sense? Means that for any prediction algorithm, the probability that you get the next bit correctly is a half plus 1 over a polynomial in k. Any fixed polynomial in k. 1 over k squared, 1 over k cubed. Because we as humans, we made the case, we cannot, it doesn't make any sense, 1 over 2 to the 300. It makes no sense at all. So, but 1 over k squared, we may be able to recognize it a little bit. Okay? So these are unpredictable means that in polynomial time, you cannot do better than flip a coin. If you ask, say, hey, these are the string, so output, the bits output so far. Here is the code I'm using. What is the next bit? If you flip a coin, you are right. We probably have. Nobody can take away this from you. I'm asking you, can you be slightly better than a half? If you can't, then the sequence is unpredictable. Alright. So, that essentially is a half for human purposes, right? Good. So, therefore, the way we set up the game is that we are talking about a deterministic expansion of randomness. I'm not going to tell you where you should fish for randomness. I'm going to tell you how you should expand it. And now let me tell you that suddenly that is a conceivable story. Why conceivable? To say, wait a second, if you only use a short string, yeah, it's short, but it's k-bit. So if I want to predict, I could cycle through all possible 2 to the k string until I find a match, and then it's easy to predict. But good luck, because we'll all die, the sun will become cold, who knows whatever theory of the universe appears over there, nobody will ever see this, you know, even tiny bit, you know, of cycling through. So it is conceivable, so we cannot rule it out off right away. Okay, so now that we have a definition which is at least conceivable, let me convince you that there is actually something that you can work with. This definition is actually attainable by a construction, and let me tell you our original construction. I figure out that the easiest way is to convey every idea should be conveyed, if we are not lazy, and this should be conveyed too, and I'm going to exemplify humanizing the construction. Behold a human. This is me or you. Okay? So, this is a human, and what characterizes humans? I would say for self-ignorance. I don't know about you, but I don't know much, I don't understand much about myself. In fact, I'm so ignorant about myself that I'm going to posit that each one of us has a secret bit in our own hearts, and I can't possibly see it. I don't know. For all I know, my bit is 0 in probability 50-50 and 1 in probability 50-50. That's a bit. We do not know ourselves. However, in life, there is such consolation as friendship. Alright? So, you have your best friend. There is the best friend of this gal on the left, is this other one on the right. Notice that our second human here carries also a bit. We call it B1. Does he know B1? No, he's a human. That's what we said. That's what being human is about. You don't know B1. But who is a friend but one who knows you better than you know yourself? So, you see the guy on the left, he say, this is my best friend, I see through his heart, he carries a 0 in his own heart. Okay? Good. I'm going to claim that with these two ingredients, I'm ready to describe to you how to generate unpredictable, in the above sense, very strong sense, random bits. And I'm going to do it as follows. Assume that I want to expand 40 bits. Why 40 bits? Because we are a billion, which is 10 billions right now on the planet. 40 bits can certainly more than enough to grab a human at random. So I'm going to flip a few bits, and I'm going to grab at random Juliet. You have been selected. Okay. I'm using 40 bits to pick up Juliet. And I claim I can now get, you know, millions of bits, unpredictable bits out of it. And at Juliet, I'm going to say, you, of course, as we said, you are human, so you don't know what bit is in your heart, but you are a best friend. I know that you have a large choice among humanity, but do you mind, for the purpose of this example, to choose Parik? Conveniently located. Yes, very good. So during this interview, Parik, you don't know what's in your heart anyway, so don't listen. But I said, Juliet, what is the bit in Parik's heart? Can you tell us?
What is the bit?
No, you have to tell me, because I selected Parik as your best friend. Which means you know him better than he knows himself. Okay. So you know what the bit he carries in his heart. What is it? 0 or 1? You make it up.
1.
Okay. Parik, who is your best friend?
Michael,
of course. And what bit does he carry?
Also one.
Michael, who is your best friend? Say, Martin. And what is his bit?
Zero,
of course. And Martin, who's best friend, Alisa, and what's a
zero, sir.
Zero, very good. Okay, so you can see that we have, by the way, gone through in this interview, and we said 1, 1, 0, 0. I could continue, of course, because you can ask who is your best friend, and we can continue as much as you want. Now, what I'm going to do is do the following. You see these bits that I've generated? I'm going to output them in reverse order. And because for bits we can actually remember, what were the last 4 bits? 0, 0, 1, 1. Now I'm going to say, Juliet, could you predict, say, with probability 51% in this sequence, what the next bit is? And the answer is no. Why? Because Juliet, by assumption, I said, it's like one of us. She doesn't know the bit in her own heart better than 50-50. But she could go and generate and ask, she knows her best friend, can ask Parik who's best friend is, and can go in this quest for k squared, k cubed times until she feels tired of it. Then she can generate all these bits going in this forward direction. Then she can output herself backwards, And if she has a way to extrapolate what the next bit is better than 50-50, I'm violating the assumption that she knows her bit better than 50-50. So these bits are unpredictable. Now, I want to say that is the, now let's take the humans out of the picture. What do we need here to output bits is this triangular relationship. There is a function f of x, which is easy to evaluate, that's your best friend function. It is hard, given f of x, to figure out what the bit of x that you care about is, but it's easy, given from x, to figure out what the b of x is. By the way, it's a simple exercise to realize that the function going from x to f of x, if this picture is correct, is a one-way function. Why? Because if it were easy to invert, you could compute the b of x. You go back and say, who was in the world elected me as a best friend? Unfortunately, as humans, we are very good to pick up our own friends, but we have no idea who really loves us, right? So that is a problem. So, but this is a one-way function. Otherwise, I could figure out x, and then it, by assumption, is easy. Now I want to say something has happened, which is a bit magical and simple. See, we were in the claws of subjectivism. So is the sequence look random to you? Yes, no, well, maybe. This is nothing to do with subjectivism. This is mathematics. So if there is a one-way function and a predicate, a bit, that stands in this triangular relationship, we can output unpredictable bits, period. That's a mathematical statement. Now, are there such things? Notice that this is a very demanding thing, because it means that given f of x, you have no idea better than at random to figure out what b of x is. Turns out that there are such function and predicates, and the first one actually was the discrete log function, and the bit about x, which was 50-50 unpredictable, was 0 if x, once you invert f, x, you find it was less than p minus 1 over 2, and 1 over y. And why do you know that this is 50-50 unpredictable? Because we proved that if it was 50.0001 predictable, then you could invert the discrete log function right away. So the discrete log function would not be one way. All right, so we are doing tremendous progress. Now all of a sudden we have a mathematical way to say what things are somehow unpredictable without any recourse to subjectivism. Then, how good are these notions of unpredictability? Well, you know, it's pretty good. Let me convince you. So, if you are a bit sequence, somebody tosses a coin, and you ask, what is the probability of having the string 010 occur? I know it is late in the day.
1/8.
Good. So, can it be that if you do things unpredictable in this other way that I just described, 010 occurs, say, with less probability, let's say 1/10. Would this be possible? And the string be unpredictable? Would not be possible. Why? Because if it were possible that somehow 010 means, you know, occurs less often, once I see 01, I say, oh, 010 is probability 1/10. So I bet 1 is the next bit, and I'm going to be correct better than 50-50. Good. Similarly, another test that I could do is to say, well, given a sequence of 2k coins, I'm saying, are zeros more probable than one? It should not be the case. And if this number is unpredictable, it's an easy exercise to prove that this is true also for these unpredictable bits. And then you go statistical test by statistical test by statistical test until Yao put a hand on this happy chase and say, hey, unpredictability is a universal efficient test. Okay? To tell you what this means, I to tell you, make it take a diversion, which was a notion of with Shafi about undistinguishability, and that is operational versus ontological. I'm no philosopher. That is the maximum I can say about using a philosophical term here, okay? So I'd like to tell you what this undistinguishability really means. Let me tell you first of all the English, right? And then if time allows me, I'm going to go and give you the mathematics. So assume that you go in front of a jewelry store and you find a beautiful diamond. You have no idea how much it costs, but it's so beautiful, you enter the store and you inquire, I've never seen such, how much does it cost? And the shopkeeper tells you, it's $1,000,000. Oh, I'm not surprised, it's a great diamond. He says, hey, but what is this other diamond next to it? So what, how much it cost? $1. How can it be? Oh, because that on the left is a true diamond. That on the right, it is not. But it looks okay. Oh, of course it looks okay. Oh, I see, but maybe if you weigh, it's different. No, it's perfect. The relative weight is absolutely identical. Maybe if you put in in the X-rays, you see some patterns. No, you cannot see by X-ray. But maybe there is... No, you don't understand. Any test whose results you can see in the lifetime of the universe will not be able to distinguish the true diamond from the fake diamond. So really? Absolutely. So, well, can I have two of those, please? Because at this point, who cares, right? If there is nothing that is going to distinguish, in what sense are they different? So let us see what this means. The notion of the GM distinguishability is about the distinguishability of distributions. What is a distribution? For you and I today, is an urn. There is a bunch of things there, you grab into the urn and you grab out a string out of it. These strings are k-bits, okay? And so what is a test? Well, a test, if you want to distinguish distribution A from distribution B, it better be a polynomial time algorithm. Why? Because if it doesn't give me the answer when I'm alive, who gives a damn? And so what is the test output? It's a bit. Why? Zero is interpreting, I think whatever you fed me comes from the distribution A, or one, you can interpret whatever you fed me comes from the distribution B. Good. So you can define the following experiment. Fish from A, feed the test, and see what probability outputs one. That's a very well-defined probability. And I want to call it, for lack of fantasy, PAK. That is the probability that you output one when you feed inputs from distribution A. Similarly, I define PBK. That's the probability that you output one when you feed from B. So I have these two probabilities. I know they exist, right? It's going to take a long time to compute it because there are a lot of very large distribution. But I'm going to say that the distribution A and B are GM and distinguishable by the test T if the absolute value difference of the two probability is less than a half plus something for human consumption.
You want two A's there?
Oh, no, the second ought to be a B, sorry. Okay? All right, so, and then I'm going to say that the two distributions are indistinguishable, GM and distinguishable, if they are not distinguishable by any polynomial time statistical test. Okay, let me say this in English again.
You mean Van Kalk plus or just 1 over 40k? Van Kalk? No.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
It's less, the two distributions, the two probabilities are less at 1 poly k close.
Oh.
Good. So what does this mean with taking away the factor of a half here? Essentially it means the following. Assume that I have a string in my hand, X, and I have to say, gee, I have a problem. Does it come from A or does it come from B? And I walk back and forth all day. Then I say, oh, gee, I have a test. Right? Here is my test. I take X and I give it to the text, which happens to be my laptop, push the start button, gargles us away. 1 week later, output's one. When they say, oh, I've given an output, it's one. Ha ha. Aha, what? If the probability gives me one, is the same when the probability was A, or the same when the probability was B, there is no information in having got an output to one. Therefore, if I was smarter, I would have saved electricity to run the computer for a week, and because whatever the output I get leaves me in the same position than before.
Now, Silvio,
yep.
The polynomial appearing here depends on the time complexity of T. In other words...
You fix arbitrarily the complexity of T, and you fix arbitrarily the polynomial.
For all those of complexity k to the fifth, you have...
Right. Okay, so if we rephrase this, then the Yau's theorem becomes that unpredictable bits essentially are indistinguishable from truly random ones. And therefore, they are as good as new, as good as random. There is no difference anymore. Very good. So, by the way, before we use a specialized function like the script log, then quadratic residuals that I say as factoring, and I must say that there was a beautiful result of a study in Pagliazzo, our very own Leonid and Luby, which says, well, don't go to this specialized function, any one-way function will do. Okay? So we are in a very good shape. If one-way function exists, we have unpredictable bits. Unpredictable bits are indistinguishable from truly random one. If a one-way function exists, we have essentially de facto random bits. Good. Let's elevate this further and let's go to pseudo-random functions. Okay, I'm going to look at the function from k bits to k bits. Let me tell you that's a very large space of function, because how many functions there are? 2 to the k to the 2 to the k. That's a big number. Okay, and what do we want are functions that are easy to compute. Random functions are not easy to compute. Then easy to specify, k bits should be enough to specify a function. When to specify a random function, you need the log of that, but the log of this is still 2 to the k to the 2, is a very, very is an exponential number of bits. And yet I want to be indistinguishable from truly random one. So here is I put on the red the space of all functions from k bits to the bits, and on the blue I put the space of all our function, this very sparse, easy to compute, that I want to somehow, that are indistinguishable from the red one. So I see that you are puzzled about where are these blue functions. Oh, they are there, see, but the point is that because they are diluted in a notion of 2 to the k to the 2 to the k, you don't see it. Let me give you a magnifying glass. Do you see them yet now? No, because they are too few. Well, let me give you a microscope. How about now? A telescope. Not even yet. Well, I give you a 2 to the k telescope. Finally, I see one, okay? So these are diluted, absolutely. Right? Because remember, the pseudo-random string, when there are k bits, there are 2 to the k bits immersed in a universe of 2 to the k squared bits, but still are somehow comparable. But now I want to have a 2 to the k object immersed in a universe of 2 to the k to the 2 to the k. Very, very sparse. Yet, I want to say in what sense are these objects indistinguishable. I'm going to give you a promise. I have in my hand a function. And I tell you by promise that either I grab in the space of all functions from k bits to k bits, or I picked it in this very small miniature universe, blue universe, of our function. That is ours and not all. Good. And by the way, I tell you that when I picked the function, with probability half, I picked a truly random one, with probability half, I put one of our pseudo-random one. Good. So now I want to say, how do you distinguish? The test is a polynomial time. That's what I said. It should be our. Blue our and red all. Right. Somebody looks at those lines. That's good. Okay. However, I'm going to say, who has a question for my function? If you don't ask any question, you cannot predict better than 50-50 if I took a random function or a pseudo-random one. But I let you ask a question. I'm going to be generous. You say, okay, here is x1, a k-bit input. What is the value of f on it? I'll tell you. Then you say, gee, I think I start getting the idea what function Sylvia has in mind. Here is x2, and I tell you f2, and so on and so forth, right? I let you ask, you know, polynomial in any question of your choice, anytime you want. And then you have to output random or not random. You have to tell me if you think that in my hand I choose a truly random function or not. And I'm going to say that the function is indistinguishable from a truly random one if the probability that you are correct, yes, this time half is there, is, of course you can guess the probability of half, you cannot do better than, significantly better than half. Okay? That is the thing. I'd like this to contrast this with our good old Alan, who went very close to have the right definition. But he wasn't right on the spot. So if you look at this, I'll let you read it at leisure, but essentially says, well, he thought that deciding the pseudo-randomness of a function was enough that you had to be able to predict correctly on some input x that you did not ask about what f of x was. Here we are lowering down the bar, or actually erasing it, which means not only should not be able to get it right, but it should not even tell you if with a whether it's going to contain more zeros than ones, or anything else at all. Right? So it should not be able to distinguish it. So essentially, he says here, he said that when I came to this country, English was somehow a crypto system. But you know, after a while, I started learning it. Huh? I asked, how do you call this laptop? How do you say this chair? Soon I learned enough, okay, to get by. But here, the test is not to predict what this object is named, which is a projector, but I'm going to say, well, this planet you land with, are they talking random gibberish, or they are speaking a language? You should not be able to detect even that. So that is a much higher thing. So it is a small, but it's actually a big difference as well. So the theorem, actually there is a theorem, and the theorem is that if you can generate static object, which is pseudo-random bits, you can actually have these interactive object, you can actually specify a random function. So you can turn a generator into a function. Right now you can see that there are a little bit of blue here, I blow it up a little bit, so it almost looks white, but actually I'm picking selective over there, and this inherit is going to be a convoluted reduction, because I'm reducing a static object to a dynamic one. In fact, a dynamic is here, it's something that you can query. But this theorem actually has served us well, in particular in learning. Starting with the paper of Kearns and Valiant, it is now the quintessential way to say that there are objects that are not learnable. Because here you can interrogate the function and still don't understand anything at all at the end of it. Okay. And by the way, there is also an associated statistical test, which is a little more complicated than before. And the statistical test is you can query a function at will, x f of x, y f of y, z f of z. Then you say, I think I'm ready to pass the test. Okay, I want to be interrogated about omega, input omega. You choose, not me, after querying the function. Good. I'm going to give you f of omega, the truth, and a random big number. But I'm going to give you in random order. Now, the probability half, you can tell which is which. But if you can do better, I tell you, you win. And the theorem is that if you cannot win, then the function passes all polynomial time statistics for functions, and vice versa. That is a complete system. It's a bit more convoluted, but that's what it is. So in sum, what we have done by going all this chain of reduction, we have transformed a one-way function, which is not random at all. In particular, think about the RSI function. It's a wonderful function that Ron here has invented, and is very algebraic, satisfies all kinds of... is not random in any sense of the universe. And yet, you can actually transform it to have essentially a random tableau, and you cannot tell the difference. So randomness is the extreme of hardness, in this sense. So something harder to compute, then if it is not random, you can, with a little bit more computation, transform into something else, which is essentially random. So the question that has somehow raised at the beginning, is there non-determinism in the universe, was the wrong question. The more important question is there, are there 300 random bits in the universe? Because if there are, we can actually transform them in a way that we cannot tell if the universe is probabilistic by anything we do in polynomial time, in the lifetime of the universe. Therefore, by definition, it is good enough. So that is somehow the right question. And I want to conclude is to say, well, Alan gave us computation, but I really believe that computation is really a key, and I wanted to be particularly, not to show my hands very much, because at least if I'm concerned, I would say the key, but I'm very cognizant that there are other ways to approach the universe and conditions. But I want to tell you where my bias is. That is going to be a key that is going to unlock a lot about the universe, about ourselves, and if you want, I'm not a philosopher, but should I pick? I'll be a Christian Kabbalist. So one of those guys who believed in Harmonia Mundi, that somehow to study the universe, yourself and the divine is one and the same thing, and I really believe that actually is computation that is going to, that you really is going to, the glue that holds them together. So thank you, Alan, and thank you all.
Complexity, not of undecidable, but decidable theories. I mentioned that what prompted me was a question by McCarthy. And actually, it was a question about Aswell's. And the answer I gave was using what would be called now a one-way function, namely the middle square function. And I asked the question, so easy to compute, difficult to infer, to find even one inverse. Of course, we don't yet know. But that prompted me to look at the general question of complexity of decidable theories. Now, can you relate your question about the existence of 300 random bits, you know, in the universe, to the question of quantum indeterminacy and hidden variables? So could Einstein would be very happy. Could there be a situation where we are observing all of these quantum indeterminacy or random responses, outcomes I mean, and actually it's all deterministic and it's simply an expression of a function or class of functions which are based only on 300 random bits.
Okay, so first of all...
that would really be a one key.
But the universe is not going to be revealed. No person worth knowing, you can know it in 5 minutes, and no universe worth living in, you can learn it in 500 years. So there are certain aspects. So first of all, quantum mechanics is a very elegant hypothesis. And there are things like the EPR paradox that I don't see how we can somehow, even with a powerful theory of pseudo-randomness, you can explain that type of conspiracy between hidden variables. However, certainly a lot of other things could be explained deterministically. To steal a line from my friend Alenia here, is to say, well, you know, where's the 300 bits? It seems a lot, right? Where do you fit them? You know, do you have a piece of paper? Says, well, you know, these particles, they know a lot of bits, right? And so, in fact, they should know, as he said, you know, the Planck's constant to very high precision, because otherwise you would figure it out of it, you know, that there is no jump in energy. So there is a lot that you can explain, but I don't believe that the PR paradox is explained by that, but certainly a lot of other a lot of things that they would be explainable. Yeah.
No, I guess you wanted to ask the same questions.
Oh, okay.
You have the same mind of
those. Any other questions?
Thank you.